Today, Law and Gospel and Mockingbird at the Movies. Dave Zoll is here to talk about faith, film, and connecting Christianity and culture on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
And I am the old white guy, Steve Brown, the expert in pop culture. When I said welcome to Steve Brown, etc., I told you everything I know about that subject. Eric is the executive producer in the little glass booth. He's there watching movies as we speak, a waste of time.
Are we on? We're on? We're on right now?
Yeah, we're on.
All right, we're on.
Just turn it off and pay attention. The Reverend Canon Dr. Justin Holcomb is on a plane to India.
Is there pop culture in India?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
They're probably watching. Yeah, they have those
the Bollywood
movies.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, that's right. I was only there once, but I didn't see
You
the
didn't
movies.
See those?
No.
No.
I didn't.
Because you still didn't know anything about pop culture 40
no,
years ago.
I really did. Our resident megachurch pastor, Zach Van Dyke, is here. He'll also be our resident pop culture expert today.
Wow. A former actor.
Wow, okay. All right.
Appearing in shows like...
Mr. Pop
the OC.
Culture.
The OC. You remember that program?
That great pop culture
And what
icon.
Was the play you did?
Godspell.
Oh, that was cool.
Yeah.
You rewrote the thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was better than original.
Oh, well, thank
you. It was good.
All right. It was great.
I think he qualifies as our in-house expert on pop culture.
All right. That works for me. And then Kathy's here, too. She's the soft feminine side of the program. She spent all morning filling out forms on my behalf. And I'm going to be especially
He's going
nice
to be nice
to
me
her today.
Today. Hey, I want to know why pop culture is so hard for you.
Because he doesn't care.
Yeah, that's it. I was going to say something profound, but I really don't.
Because you can't just say it's because you're old because, you know.
It's always been true.
Dave Zoll's dad, Paul, I mean, he's like.
I know.
You know, I mean, he's older. I don't think he's as old as you because. Nobody's as old as you, but I mean, he's older and he knows a lot about pop culture.
Listen, when I was a teenager, I used to force myself to listen to music so I didn't sound stupid around my friends. I went to movies because I knew they were going to be talking about movies. I even went to museums on occasion just so everybody would know that I went to museums on occasion. Frankly,
you didn't care.
I didn't care. I'd rather read a book.
Oh, yeah.
An old book. I just want you to know that.
Okay.
But it's okay. I fake it good. Nobody knows. And if you say I said any of what I just said, I'll say you lied. Our guest today, and I take great joy in watching his joy in pop culture, is Dave Zoll, one of my favorite people. He's the director of Mockingbird Ministries and editor-in-chief of the Mockingbird blog. You got to go there. It's mbird.com. mbird.com. Dave's the author of A Mess of Help, from The Crucified Soul of Rock and Roll, and the co-author of a new book titled Law and Gospel, A Theology for Sinners and Saints. He's also, and we're going to talk about both these books, also contributed to Mockingbird at the Movies. And just so you know, the 9th Annual Mockingbird Conference is April 14th through 16th in New York City.
Your favorite.
Yeah, if I own New York and hell, I'd live in hell and rent New York out. But
now, wait a minute.
Listen, hold it. No, well, Disney would be
in
there
somewhere. Yeah, you said that last week.
I know. Go to mbird.com for some details. And then Dave will be here for the Christ Hold Fast Conference in Orlando, February 18 through 20. And Dave
and
I, yeah, I'll be there too.
You're so funny. Let's just get all the promotion out of the way right now. It's like, okay, now I promoted, done.
That's come from being a pastor for 1,000. You got to get up and preach, and you don't give a rip about side things, but you got to say them.
Like getting then all the announcements over with.
The announcements are over. Now we can get down and we can talk. Dave, thanks for taking some time to be with us.
I'm thrilled, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Hey, listen, tell us if there are people who aren't familiar with Mockingbird, give us a little bit about what you guys are about. What's your mission?
Mission is to connect Christian faith with everyday life, but I guess that's everyone's mission, isn't it? It's really, we're kind of a media platform that looks to for creative ways to integrate or point out or connect Christian truths, especially with a strong emphasis on the gospel of grace, long gospel, theology of the cross, this kind of reformational understandings, point those out in all aspects of culture, not just pop, I will say, in our defense. And sometimes we leave culture at the door completely, believe it or not, as much as one can. Being part of the culture.
It's hard to be an outsider of the human race, and I know that.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what we do, Steve. And we're not unlike Key Life. I think we're, but we're much, much younger, clearly.
And cooler. Much cooler.
Everybody's much, much younger. I just want you to know that. Hey, by the way, your father is in your face about law and gospel. I, a number of years ago, was teaching a class at RTS's campus in Washington, and a guy came up to me and said, you know, you ever heard of Paul Zoll? And I said, no. And he said, he sounds kind of like you. He says it better. You say it more in your face, and you make an obscene gesture, but I'm going to bring you a book. And I stayed up that whole night, Dave, and read your daddy's book. And it blew me away. I suspect that in this new book on law and gospel, you're going to be kind of saying some things that he's said for a long time and which have cost him a lot.
That's true. That's true. We that book, Grace and Practice, which you're talking about, was very formative, and it's still a very exciting and wonderful book. I think it's had a lot of effect on a lot of people, but it's also, you know, to the extent it's gotten some people excited, it's gotten other people's backs up.
Oh.
In a big way.
Yeah, that's true. I almost spoke in tongues after I read it. I thought, you know, here's a guy who's smart, and he's saying good stuff, and I have sold more books than your father has sold of that book and a number of his others. Tell me about, kind of pretend that the book isn't published and you're trying to sell it to a publisher, given that you're the publisher, you don't have to do that, but mm-hmm. You're trying to sell it to a publisher. What is it you want to say in a book like this?
Well, okay, sure. Well, we wanted to say it briefly. We wanted a short book that people would actually read, so we decided to cap it at 90 pages. And the observation going in is simply that Americans are addicted to optimism, and it's killing them, and it's sort of creating a huge amount of the can-do, bootstrapping works righteousness of not only American people, but just American Christians, who turn out are people as well. That is really not helping. And in fact, it's creating a lot of refugees and a lot of scarring and a lot of people who want nothing to do with the church. So we found that this distinction between the law and the gospel, an understanding of that distinction as it relates to scripture, as it relates to church life, as it relates to everyday life, is really a key to, it's the difference between your understanding your faith as good news and understanding it as a lengthy, ever-shifting to-do list.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's the same drum we're always beating, that you guys beat so beautifully. but to set the captives free, to reclaim what it is about Christianity that's exciting and true, and the one-way love of God for sinners like you and me.
You know something? The Donald Trump phenomenon is interesting. We're going to make America great again. And Donald Trump can't hear the gospel, but should he be elected president of the United States, he might be a candidate for the gospel after the first 6 months, you think?
Well, didn't he come out and say something about how he's never asked for forgiveness?
Yeah. I don't believe I'd said that, and I certainly wouldn't say it in a thunderstorm. But, and I don't want to make this into a political thing. I have some very strong views, which Jesus says I can't express, but they're better than everybody else's, I know. So I'm not going to do it. But you really got to screw it up to get the gospel, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, it's what, you know, kind of second conversion almost has to happen. But it's why, you know, every time
Dave,
church,
hold it right there, because we're going to pursue it on the other side. We got to pay for this thing, so we're gonna back out.
Sure thing.
By the way, guys, you got to get this book. This book is not a fantasy read that you can read like a comic book, but it's 90 pages of the most exciting news you can possibly hear. Why don't you go to our website, keylife.org, download this interview, buy the books for your small study, and then put them together. People will then rise up and call you blessed. A famous violinist was asked why his music was so magnificent. He said, "I never play until my own soul is thrilled. And then the music is an expression of my soul." That's what ought to happen with Christians, but we fake it too much. I have a friend who told me that at his church they put lemon juice in the communion cup so people would look holy. Go to Jesus and just sit there until his joy, freedom, and love get into your soul. And then go play your music for the world. Too many people go to Jesus and leave as soon as they get saved. They should stick around a little longer, then their music wouldn't be so sour. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. Hey, Dave Zoll is our guest, and you ought to write down these two books. We're going, if we can find time, to discuss both of them, at least some. Law and Gospel, the most recent, A Theology for Sinners and Saints. And he also contributed to Mockingbird at the Movies, that maybe we'll get to if we have time.
Yeah, I can see what you're doing. Let's just stay with the Law and Gospel thing. Put off the movies,
part.
And yes. Then maybe we don't have to talk about it.
That's right, man. You can go on back to watch your movies in that
number.
Little glass booth. Dave, before the break, before I so rudely interrupted you, I had said you really got to screw it up to get the gospel. And I think you said yes, but I'm not sure. But that's when I stopped you. So would you continue?
Oh, sure. What I was going to say is that I work at a church here, an Episcopal church. We have a number of services, and they like a lot of churches, they kind of cater to different demographics. There's the family service and the sort of blue-haired service, and then the sort of contemporary service with college students. And you'd think that the people who would be most excited about grace, about hearing, you know, the message of God, the freedom that we hear and pardon in from the Bible, you'd think it might be the young people because they're presumably, cutting edge or more into, they're more closely associated with things like freedom. But, you know, when you really preach the gospel, you find that the blue hairs are much, much more excited about it across the board because they've been disillusioned about themselves and about the world. It's uncanny to me. Every single week, every time you preach a sermon about, you know, the human condition and how stuck we are in our own mess and how self-defeating things often become, and then you talk about God's, you know, mercy.
Yeah.
In a really, you know, monergistic, one-way, absolving way, the older folks are the ones that really get it. They don't need to be convinced. They know that it's their only hope.
If they're honest, that's very true.
I think there's a lot of denial out there, but that's because I'm in denial myself about a great many things.
Yeah, me too. But you know, sometimes I say, you know, being old, I'm going to die soon, and frankly, I'm so sick of myself. You know, I thought I'd be a lot better by now than I am. I really did. When I was your age, Dave, I thought, you know, if I hang in this thing and keep listening to the gurus who were lying to me, but I didn't know it at the time, and keep trying hard, then not only will America be better, but I'll be better. But right now, frankly, when I go to bed at night, I tell him, you could have done better than you've done. And old people who are willing to kiss that demon on the lips are so open to the gospel that it's amazing.
I know. There's nothing more free than a person who's accepted that they're not going to get any better. In fact, in a lot of ways, they're just getting worse.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, you're going to make some people angry with this. Why do people? I mean, this is good news. It's really what the Christian faith, why do people get so, and they really do. You ought to see the letters and emails and phone calls we get here. People get angry at this. Why? I don't get that. Why is that happening?
I think you do know because I've read it and I've learned it from you. But I think it's an attack on personal control. What this message is basically that God's in control and you're not, and that in fact that what he's going to do for you is better than anything you could do for yourself, and that personal control is such a strong force in all of our lives, and we just hate being unburdened of it. I'm sitting here in Virginia, and we've got 20 inches of snow on the ground, and everyone's lives have been disrupted for 3 days, and all plans are off. And for some people, that's exciting. For some people, that's a nice thing. It's like, oh, I don't have to feel guilty. Everyone's taking a break. It's great. But for other people, you watch as they try to go jogging in the, you know, 30-degree, 20 inches of snow. You think, you know, just stop. It's okay. your precious routine can bend for a minute. But if you're doing it's the Christian, the spiritual equivalent of sending a blizzard, and people don't like it. So, but then again, those who've already are already under 10 feet of snow don't care.
That's right.
I can't take the metaphor that far, but you know what I mean.
Hey, Dave, I loved what you said was kind of the point of the book when you were trying to sell it to us about how optimism and the American optimism has gotten us into so much trouble, and it's led to despair. And but even just hearing that, and I'm thinking, you know, you've got a bunch of, you know, young people who think they're going to change the world for Jesus. Are you telling them not to be optimistic about that?
Well, I think that no. I think that we can be optimistic about what God can do.
Yeah.
But what you know, we cite a poll, I think, that was taken in 3 years ago, 4 years ago, of millennials, and this is just 20, 30-somethings, who do they agree with the phrase, I'm fairly certain I'm going to get to where I want to be in life. And in 1912, some similar study, I think 11% of people agreed with that statement. And in 2011, 2012, whenever that second study was taken, something like 85% of people agreed with it. And so what you have is a lot of people that are going to be very disappointed in life, like extremely disappointed, because none of us I mean, have any of you guys gotten where you want to be in life or where you thought you wanted to be when you were 20? I don't think so. But if it's just the difference between the baseline understanding that I am small and God is big versus I'm bigger than I think I am. And is life, are you going to be set up for a life of surprise and awe or a life of disappointment and bitterness? And so that's kind of where we're coming from in the book. The book, it's also, you know, we throw around the terms law and gospel, and you hear it a lot out there, at least on the internet, various churches. But we didn't see anything that was just a quick or slightly, you know, in-depth explanation of what we mean, at least when we use those words. There was a pamphlet that was written in the 20s or the 30s by a Lutheran guy named Werner Ehlert, and he was writing in response to Karl Barth. And he wrote this great 20-page, 30-page little monograph about that difference, and we'd been using it for a long time just to hand to people, but it was pretty antiquated, and it was also, it lacked almost any kind of everyday horizontal touch points. And so we kind of want to reinvent that for today's audience, or at least our audience.
And one of the really interesting things is you started out with our culture. We have a tendency to think the law gospel thing is only for religious people who can define the law and define the gospel. But in a politically correct, I can do anything, just do it culture, this is good news for you guys, too. I don't know why you're listening to this broadcast, but if you're a pagan, and you are, guys like Dave have important things to say to you. So just shut up, be still for a moment, and listen. And you'll be really glad you did.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know. A gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
Hey, you're listening to Steve Brown, etc. The books we're talking about, Law and Gospel, A Theology for Sinners, and then also a little bit later, going to talk about Mockingbird at the Movies. And by the way, write this date down, April 14th to 16th in New York, the Mockingbird Conference. Those things are dynamite. They will blow you away.
So, Dave, we've thrown around these words, law and gospel. Could you maybe riff on those words a little bit just to, you know, explain what we mean by that to people that aren't familiar with the terms?
Sure. Well, that's obviously the book is concerned in doing that in a slightly, in a brief way, because these are big concepts. But there's stuff that, as Steve was saying, there's stuff that everyone is familiar with. The law, with the capital L, is usually the law of God. Thou shalt, you know, love thy neighbor as thyself. Love God with all your heart, strength, and mind. Those are the Sermon on the Mount laws, but there's also the Ten Commandments. But we're talking about an imperative. We're talking about a demand, some kind of requirement, some standard of behavior. And in the book, we talk about it not only as a prescriptive statement, because it's not a grammatical formula. It's simply, thou shalt be or do such and such. But how that functions, you know, as a measure, That's the way we sort of, the laws that we've decided to adhere to is how we measure other people and ourselves. It's usually what drives the accusation, the extent to which I don't feel beautiful or, gracious is defined by the standard to which I'm adhering. But then, as I talked about earlier, it's a means of control. The law is sort of an if-then. If you do such and such, then you will live. If you obey my commands, then you will live. And that gets translated into all sorts of cultural... If it's such a strong thing that's written on the human heart, if it's that deep of a reality, well, you see all sorts of bastardizations of the law in terms of, thou shalt be beautiful, or thou shalt be thin, or thou shalt be wealthy, thou shalt be successful, thou shalt go to this school or that school. But as we know, that kind of law, both the capital L and the sort of little L, echoes, which we see, and they're very different, by the way. The big L law is good, and it's holy. Little L laws tend to be cruel, arbitrary, though occasionally they're good, I guess. But it's what it brings death, because all of us know who trying to follow the law in a secular or religious way, we know that we can't do it. And so if we're taking it, if the law is all we have to go on, all fall short, and the wages of sin is death, and we see that. So we catalog sort of how the law plays out, and we talk about the various responses, how people, sometimes they fight the law, sometimes they fly from the law, sometimes they try and appease it. And then we get into gospel, which there are any number of ways to describe or define gospel, but we define it first as news, as good news. And what is it good news about? It's good news about a person, about this person, Jesus Christ, who is given to us as a gift. So we talk about in terms of gift, and that brings you into the idea of reciprocity. Is it a true gift in the sense of which, is it given freely, or is there strings attached? A lot of times Christianity puts strings attached, which are little laws that kind of creep back in. But to find that there is something objective, something good, something ultimate, something accomplished in the gospel, which is this good news about a person, Jesus Christ, who has been given as a gift. And the forgiveness of sins, which is ours through his death and resurrection, is this glorious gospel. So, and that's different than the law. If the law says do, and it's never done, then the gospel says done. Everything is already finished. That's sort of a paraphrasing of Martin Luther. But that's the basic way we are talking about it. We also outline some fruits of the gospel, some things that we see slightly distinct from the fruits of the Spirit, but more just trying to find new terms to talk about these things. Stuff that can happen when people truly believe that they're forgiven. They truly believe that they're not just known, but known and loved, absolved. We talk about some things that can happen, not that have to happen, but we talk about humility and humor and spontaneity and generosity and love. So that's where the book goes. And then we have some appendices where we sort of give you some how-tos about here's 10 easy ways to understand the difference between law and gospel, which are slightly tongue-in-cheek, because the second you're back into 10 easy ways to do this or that, you're
back into the law.
that's a huge thing that we're trying to uncover in 90 pages, but we wanted something succinct.
Hey, Dave, when you were talking before about the difference in how older people respond to the gospel and younger people, and you used that very unpleasant term about blue hair people. I'm one of the blue hair. No, that's okay. I can deal with it. I'm one of the blue hair people.
No, you can't. She's angry and you're in trouble, Dave.
No, I'm one of the blue hair people. And I'm fortunate enough to be involved now for a lot of years in a ministry that is trying to teach people about law and gospel and to get people to understand. And I feel like almost on a weekly basis, because I'm fortunate enough to be in a church that understands that also and teaches it, I feel like, that blue hair kind of stands up on end almost on a weekly basis, because, and I feel like it's so important for me because I need to be reminded of it on a regular basis because of the fact that I think the older folks have spent so many years in this other way of thinking and trying, you know, trying so hard to do all the stuff. We're coming up on a break, so you probably won't be able to respond. You can respond on the other side. I think they desperately, more desperately want to believe it and to adopt it even than younger people do in the midst of finding it so difficult.
Our guest, Dave Zoll. We'll talk to him on the other side. And then on the other side of the break, we're going to address the subject of movies. They're full of sex and violence and debauchery, and that's why I like them. But I ought to feel guilty. So we're going to find that there are some redeeming values in movies. Well, maybe. Maybe not. We'll see. But if you miss any of this, you're out of your mind. Don't go away. When you become a believer, God gives you two gifts. Gives you a mirror and a picture. You're supposed to look into the mirror and contemplate the picture. The mirror shows you what you look like now. And the picture, well, that's a picture of Jesus. God says that's what you are, and this is what you'll become. Sometimes it's going to hurt. Sometimes you'll mess it up. Sometimes you won't even believe it's happening, but trust me on this. One day, you'll look just like Jesus. So look at the mirror and wince, but don't forget to look at the picture and rejoice. Rejoice and relax, too. God's promise to get the job done. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. Our guest is Dave Zoll, and we've been talking about a new book called Law and Gospel, A Theology for Sinners and Saints. And you ought to download this interview and then take it to your small group. Make sure everybody has a copy of the book. It's only 90 pages, and you don't have to give your firstborn to buy it. And then make that a study. It'll change your life.
Okay, Dave. So I don't think I have to repeat. You got the gist of what I was saying.
Yeah, Kathy, you were saying that you find that older generations, they've been so steeped in a kind of a do more, try harder relationship to their faith that they're shocked or they don't quite know how to take in this new word about God's grace. Is that right?
Yeah, but I think they really want to. There's something very eye-opening and almost like a huge relief. Wow, what if this really is true? Because I sure the heck have been trying hard my entire life and have gotten nowhere.
Yeah. I think that certainly resonates with what I've found. And I don't know if there's a surefire way to get that through to someone outside of find a church where you hear the forgiveness of sins preached every week.
Yeah, and, just keep getting saturated with it.
So you can't get enough, especially when you're at the end of your life and you're haunted by things that have happened to you or things that you've done to other people, regrets and things that you would rather you'd like to lay at the altar of some God that can forgive you.
All right, I want to talk about movies.
Okay,
because Steve always makes a big deal about movies and pop culture and them not being that significant, but I've found that they've had a tremendous impact on me. I mean, that's the way that I've understood a lot about who I am and how the world's supposed to work was through, you know, what I see in movies. And so I would love, Dave, for you just to give a little lecture to Steve on why and how movies can play an important part in our spiritual upbringing.
Hey, Dave, before you do that, though, would you just, in terms of the table of contents in that book, did you all decide the specific movies that you, and then ask those specific individuals to do that? Or did you say, would you write a chapter and write it on whatever movie you want?
We basically did the second part.
Okay.
The way it came together is we realized on the website over the past 8 years. We'd had some great writing about movies. And people, movies is really the language that a lot of people deal with in terms of their own understandings of just about everything. And their storytelling. People simply don't read fiction in the way they used to, but they watch a lot of movies. And so we looked at that and we saw where were the gaps. We didn't want to just write about stuff that had appeared since 2000. We wanted it to have some kind of, we wanted to cover some ground, which we've done. I mean, the book is probably longer than it has any right to be, but it's 350 pages. And it leans towards the stuff that we're naturally drawn to, which are sort of American dramedies and indie comedies. But there's superhero stuff, and there's westerns, and there's really indie, depressing stories about forgiveness and about despair. And there's Orson Welles, and there's John Ford, and there's some, Kurosawa. There's some foreign stuff. But I wanted to cover some ground. But Eric, when you asked me about movies, I think that if you were to ask most, even young pastors today, it's like what are people focused on? Where are they spending their free time? And everyone is binge watching television shows or watching movies. And there's also an enormous amount of creative talent that's going into that these days, because we know that increasingly it's the way to reach. If you want to reach a lot of people, you make a movie. It's really hard to make a movie. And the Hollywood system is set up so that a lot of great movies don't get made. But something like you can really create a monoculture around a movie, like Star Wars, for example. I mean, everyone on the planet saw that movie, or it's made, I think over $1 billion, right, the new Star Wars. And outside of like Adele, there's sort of very few things that can motivate everyone, regardless of where they are ideologically. I read some articles about how Star Wars is an enormously popular phenomenon among Mormons. I didn't know that. But, if you actually get into Mormon theology and the Force and cooperation with God, and it kind of makes sense. So anyway, we thought that we had all this content sitting around. We really liked it, but we asked people to rewrite everything. And kind of together, it looks like a body of work, sort of how we look at movies, which is not to co-opt them or to diminish the fact that they can say a number of different things, but to look at why and how movies have moved us, and how that interplays with our faith. And for some people, that's everyone resonates with different films. But most people have films that they do resonate with, that they start to cry in, or that they remember from their childhood that they really love. So that was where we're at. Of course, you see what we were talking about, Law and Gospel, you see that played out. It's harder to talk about the gospel in films just because that happens to usually be the moment of grace, the moment of absolution, the moment of redemption is usually the climax of the film. So you don't want to give away all of that. It's a spoiler. But to the extent that people are dealing with truth, a story that works, versus a story that doesn't, you're dealing with God. So that's what we're doing with this book. And I think hopefully there's something in there for everyone.
Dave, that is so good. I hope people will go out and get both of these books. It'll cost you a little bit more for 300-something pages than 90, but it'll be worth it, and you'll be able to help out Mockingbird, too. And, Dave, you are a delight in so many ways, and it showed during this hour. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Thanks, everyone. Really appreciate the... I love what you guys do.
Hey, love what you guys do, too. Guys, we're going to back out, have some cookies and milk and rest up, because this is hard work. And then we'll come back and tell you who we're going to do it unto next week. Meanwhile, if somebody asks you what you're listening to, you tell them Steve Brown, etc. And by the way, the name of the books, Law and Gospel, A Theology for Sinners and Saints, and also Mockingbird at the Movies. Okay, rest up, take a breath, then we'll come back and wrap this thing up, land this plane, finish up, do a finale. I'm filling time because I have to do it up to the break. The definition of manhood is in crisis today. Opinions abound on how to be a, quote, real man. But do they get to the core of the identity issues that men are facing? In his book, Like Father, Like Son, men's ministry leader Pete Almanson responds to this identity crisis with a simple statement. Men can know who they are and who they're meant to be by first knowing the love of our Heavenly Father. A man who understands God's forgiveness and acceptance is free to become like Him. From his many years in working with men, Pete Almanson states one thing for sure: knowing God's fatherly love changes everything. Find your identity as a man in Like Father, Like Son by Pete Almanson. Available wherever books are sold. You know, I love having Dave on. He is a delight. And it's good to see young guys that get it. People like Zach and Dave and Eric, a little bit older, you and me, we've always known it. And it's just nice to see that we were right all along. Actually, you have to get right or you kill yourself. You know, this message is not a message that's nice if it's true. It's not a message that you see in movies, as Dave pointed out, and he so clearly articulates in that book that, well, that's your opinion, or that's one way of saying it, or we religious folks disagree about those sort of things. Guys, this is the essence of life. Life's hard, and if you haven't discovered that, there's something wrong with you. You know, if you're going to do the power of positive thinking, and let's get it done, or just do it in your life, you're in, as Dave said, a great deal of disappointment and bitterness. And if you can't do it, and you can't, then you pretend you can. And that's even worse. Denial of the reality of what life is about. It's hard. We're broken. We're lonely. I have a friend in Nashville, who has a church for broken people. It's become a mega church. And that church is filled with some of the people I don't think you'd want in your church. And I loved them. I spent a time there. It's Emmanuel Church. And the pastor got up and he said, if you're broken, if you're marginalized, if you've really sinned and you think there's no way God could love you or ever use you again, if you're empty, if you're broken, Jesus says, welcome. And man, I wanted to stand up and speak in tongues. And that's what the gospel is. The gospel is really the word to the world, whether it's little law or big law, that says, have you given up yet? Have you just said, I can't do this anymore? If you're there, I've got some really good news for you. And that's what we're about. That's what Dave is about, and Mockingbird is about, and Key Life is about, and Summit Church is about. It's some really good news. And man, we're due. Who's going to be here next week?
Well, I have some bad news. I don't know. But I have some good news. I'm really working hard because I know you would really like to have something that you'd really sink your teeth into. So I'm kind of working on maybe like a Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton dialogue.
Oh, yes, please, please.
For you.
That'd be great.
Just for you.
Just for me.
Because you like that so much.
Oh, that
so
would
much.
Be a gift.
We haven't had a liberal on in a long time.
No, we haven't.
What do you mean we haven't? That's all we have on are wacko commies and liberals. Hey. But I persevere, and I will, and we all will next week, same time, same place. Between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't do, and that gives you a wide berth.